So you lose, so what? So you win, so what? So you get cancer, so what? And by so what I mean is it's not like it doesn't matter, but it means, okay, so in the face of that, what are you now going to do?
Welcome to the Spartan Endurance Series on Spartan Up Podcast with host Johnny Waite.
Spartans! You're listening to the Endurance Series. Typically, this show is hosted by Johnny Waite. My name's Ryan Warner. I'm filling in today, and I actually interviewed Johnny to talk about how we can build obstacle immunity. Enjoy it.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com.
So let's get started. Johnny, I'm most interested in laying a foundation for the audience to start. 2007, you're the real estate mogul of Canada, as I like to say. You decide to run for political office. What happened next? Just give us the 30,000 foot overview on that turning point.
Yeah, so what happened was we have a little different political structure than you have, where we don't have set election dates. You know, we had to wait for Parliament to fall, and it was imminent. So I got raring to go. I was going to change the world, figured this is the way to do it. So I won the nomination. I guess you'd call it a primary. And I was the candidate. And then it was basically a full year of waiting for an election and shaking hands and kissing babies and shaking babies and kissing hands. In the interim, the political winds changed in Canada, where the party I was running for was not going to win the next election. And I spent an entire year. It was good in that it was an experience, but it was bad in that, I mean, it pretty much bankrupted my company because there was no income coming in while I was out campaigning, and kind of trashed my life. In the long run, I mean, I think usually when you blow up your life, it turns out to be a good thing. But in the short term, it was a pretty bad thing, in that I went from a lot of income and a pretty stable household to being broken, separated, and starting all over again. So, so that was 2007, 8, 9 was the dissolution of the John Waite that we knew.
Did you know that you were stifled as a traveler and as a growth type of person before that?
Yeah, it was a trade-off, right? I had a wonderful life in other ways, but the adventure side certainly had taken a back seat, and that's who I'd been when I was younger. I was always traveling, I was always doing exciting things, and then I'd really settled into a much more traditional lifestyle, and I don't want to discount that. I mean, there was so much good about it, but I do remember one day just realizing that I was kind of playing a game that wasn't the game I wanted to play, even if I was unfortunately good at it, which made it easy to keep doing.
That's the golden handcuffs. And it's cool to read that you and your wife just realized that you were going different paths and you had a mutual break. And I love how you kind of reframed the situation. At the end of 08, you looked at everything and you said, well, I don't have this business, I don't have this staff, I'm free to do whatever. And for your partner, it was a different viewpoint. And so you guys kind of mutually agreed to go your own way. But I just love how, to you, that was freeing. To other people, it might be scary. I think I'm somewhere in the middle, but why was it so freeing to you?
Well, I think that it's because I've learned along the way, and I guess I just sort of knew inherently at that point, that there isn't one way to do everything, and there isn't a way things are supposed to be. And I know that's a cultural cliche that you know, you find your soulmate, or you find your dream job, or everyone has a destiny, whatever it is. And I just figure that we're here for somewhere between 0 and 100 years, and we're going to do a whole bunch of stuff. And if we make any of it so crucial that we just cling to it, and that becomes, you know, that we're in the middle of the ocean, we're holding on to this one thing that we think is going to save us, it's not much of a life. And so it's not about a lack of commitment or a lack of purpose, but it's a matter of understanding that you can recreate that at any time. And so, you know, just to put a point on that, the conversation with my ex-wife, who's now still one of my very best friends in the entire world, it was, hey, we could both sort of cling to this thing that we've now realized, wow, doesn't work as well as we'd like it to, where we want different things out of life. Or we could just trust that the world's going to work out. And I mean, my kid's been better served by it. She has an incredible life, an incredible guy. I've got an incredible life, an incredible gal. Everyone gets along. And so But I think that that's the case with anything. And there's, it's funny, just talking about wrestling a minute ago. I used to say that when I was coaching youth wrestling, is I'd say to the kid right before the most important match of his life, I'd say, you realize it doesn't matter at all if you win or lose this match. Like, it matters zero, right? So if you can embrace that and go out and wrestle free and fun because you want to do it, and you understand that you've already put in the time and the work and the commitment and the focus, 100 years from now, no one's going to know if you won or lost this match, and they will always perform better in that scenario. So yeah, that's just how, kind of how I approach life, is the idea that, you know, it's funny when people say failure is not an option. Of course it's an option. It's always an option. And, you know, it's not the option you want to choose, but if you go in so clenched into everything, and I think people do go through life like that, you know, like they're so afraid of losing this thing or of not winning that thing, or that then there's not even any joy in winning. It's just a relief.
And when obstacles come up, you're so shocked by it, and it's so much of a jolt out of your normal routine, it can send people astray. And that's what we're here to talk about is, you've done several interviews, but you talk about obstacle immunity. I think so we'll define that, but I think a key of that is your approach to life where you say, so what?
Yeah. 100%. And that so what is that I've just talked about, you know, so you lose, so what? So you win, so what? So you get cancer, so what? And by so what I mean is, it's not like it doesn't matter, but it means, okay, so in the face of that, what are you now going to do? And that applies to everything. So what? So, you know, if suddenly our signal cut out, it'd be, well, so what? So what do we do now, right? Or my house gets hit by a meteorite. So what? So what do I do now? And I think that you always have to look at that, because what is. And so many people talk about what they wish was so, or if only. And that doesn't matter, because that's not what's so. What's so is what's so. And so what? So based on that, what am I now going to do? And that's the only way we can approach anything in life is looking at things in terms of reality. This is what is. What am I going to do with it? Yes, that's my so what. And then in terms of the whole idea of obstacles, and, you know, I have to give Joe credit for the obstacle immunity term, or whoever came up with it. But in terms of my approach to it, it's this. We are mistrained and ill-served by the system that tells us, if you study hard, you can go to a good school. If you go to a good school, you can get a good job. If you get a good job, you can get good income. If you get good income, you can have a good pension. And then you can retire into a nice, comfortable life. Because at the very best, that's a shitty situation. At the very best, you would never pay to watch that movie, right? And yet, even at the very best, it's not going to happen. Somewhere along the way, something is going to happen that doesn't follow that plan. You're going to get cancer. You're going to get in a car accident. You're going to lose use of your legs. Something is going to happen. You know, you're going to get fired. There's something going to happen along the way. And if your whole approach has been avoid discomfort, avoid challenges, avoid problems, then you're not going to be able to cope with it. And so that's where the idea that if you have an easy life, make your life intentionally difficult in the ways that you want it to be, so that then when there is actual difficulty that you're not anticipating, you don't want, you at least have some practice for it. It's a little bit like defensive driving, right? Like, you know, it's good to have been in the ditch before, because you know how to get out of the ditch. but just in life in general, we're so programmed to play it down the middle, to take the easy, safe route. And the idea is then you won't fail. But then you're going to get to the end of life and realize that you didn't fail because you didn't try. And I would much, much, much rather put myself out there, land on my feet, land on my face, land on my ass, and then get back up and do it again. So yeah, the idea about don't wish for an easy life, wish for a difficult life and the strength to lean into it. I just think that that's where all the gold is, no matter what you're doing. You know, if you're building a business, if you're building a family, if you're building a body, if you're building anything, it's a matter of, are you willing to do the work? And, you know, that comes up a lot in my coaching with people is it's not hard to figure out what they want. It's not hard at all. It's hard. And it's not even hard to figure out a path to get there. The hard part is, are you now going to do the work?
Yeah. And it's about, you know, I just read something earlier this week. I know you're a big quote guy. I can't recite it, but it was embrace the boring mundane, because, that's what's going to get you there. I'm not saying the boringness of a 9-to-5, I'm saying the boringness of running every day for training for an event, right? You got to embrace that kind of stuff. One of the things you said that's so interesting though, is that mindset of so what, or the mindset of reframing quote unquote negative to see the silver lining. Some people just have that. Most don't though. And we use sports or fitness as a way to callous or train our mind so that when a real world situation comes up, we're ready for it. And sports are another way to push ourselves out of our comfort zones. Like a lot of people don't have the cojones to run for office and then not rebuild their real estate empire, right? Sure, a lot of people can't do that. So if they're not ready to do that kind of a leap of faith, you know, fitness is a way to do that. And, you know, shortly into your rebirth, as I call it, you started running maybe a 5K in the past, but you did this big marathon. And you had never trained for it. And when you crossed the starting line, you started crying. Why did you cry at the beginning and not the end?
Well, that was actually the start of everything for me as far as leaning into athletics. And it was, I hadn't been a runner since high school. I ran grade 9 cross country, and then wrestling took over, and then life took over. And so I just started jogging a little bit, and I thought, if I'm going to do this, I should do this. I should go run a marathon and see what that's like. And so I went and ran a marathon. It was like 5.5 hours, terrible time, but I finished. And but what I found was at the start line, and this is what I've now found is the value in endurance sports for me. At the start line, we all started to run, and all of a sudden I realized, oh my God, for the next somewhere between 4 and 6 hours, this is all I have to do. It's left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. And then there is this wave of relief / terror that came over me of, wow, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can just focus on one thing for 5 hours. And the hardest part is while you're running, something comes up that's an uncomfortable thought, you know, maybe something you haven't resolved in your life. And it is so easy in life to literally change the channel. Most people just change the channel. Or they text someone, or they go and they listen to a podcast, or they throw on a song to distract, whatever it is. I mean, we will not be with discomfort, period. We will find anything in the world to get us away from that discomfort. And I did it, started having some uncomfortable thoughts come up, like just realizing, you know, some things that I didn't like about myself. And I couldn't not be with it. And so I spent a lot of that race, overwhelmed with this. And at the end, I realized that was the most valuable 5 hours I've spent in a long, long, long time. And now, you know, I've gone and done 100-mile races where you're running through the night, and you just remember that conversation that you didn't leave the way you wanted it to. And for the next couple hours, you're going to replay the conversation in your head, and you're probably going to go call that person the next day to say, hey, I really hate the way we left that. And so, so to me, that's what it was. It was forcing you to be with yourself, forcing me to be with myself. Good, bad, and ugly, and lean into that and work through that, because, you know, life is not set up that way. Life is TikTok. Life is 15 seconds. It's so funny how life gets shorter and shorter and shorter. Every time an app comes out, it's like, now we've got a 7-second thing.
Yeah.
And oh man, we are not programmed anymore to do deep work, and it's the important stuff.
It is. And I love how anytime you go for a run, like, it's almost like self-therapy, because to your point, you're in that mental space by yourself, but it's also a goldmine of creativity and awesome ideas if you really let it. And I find that it happens about 45 minutes in, and then after that, you're in the green. But I got to ask you about the part where you ran by somebody who was cheering for you, and you said something derogatory in your mind. You're like, oh, you should be out here running, you know? And I do the same thing. And I find that one of the biggest problems when I got my life together was not judging other people for being lazy.
Huge.
Because it's so easy just to say, God, what a piece of shit. Like, why aren't they getting going? Could you tell that story?
It's not just fitness, it's anything, right? Like, I read something funny the other day, and it was, or actually saw a video, and it was a woman saying that an unexpected side effect of the vaccine was that she had this incredible feeling of superiority over everyone that she didn't expect. But it's with anything, right? Like, you get somebody who meditates, and they start telling you how, oh, they feel so sorry for people who don't meditate because they're not enlightened, which is the least enlightened thing you could say. And but in truth, almost always when we are judging somebody else for something, it's because we're not happy about ourselves in that area, even if we think we are. And so I'm out there running my first marathon, and you know, on the one hand, I'm not running fast. People are passing me left, right, and center. I feel like shit. And on the other hand, I run past these people who are out there, and they're in grubby tracksuits that are extra large because they were extra large, and they had their coffee in one hand and their cigarettes in the other, and they had a little sign that said, "Go runners, go." And as they ran by, and it's funny because there's part of the marathon where there's 10,000 people around, this is a part where there's, you know, no one around in this industrial area. And as I ran by, the first thought that went through my head was, "Well, you run, fat ass. Like, what? You don't sit there and tell me what to do."
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I thought, "Wow, where the hell did that come from? That's not like me. I wouldn't say that." And I thought, "Well, you're the only one in here. You just said that." And I got really caught up. Like, I almost wanted to turn around and go back and apologize, which would have been odd having not said anything out loud. Instead, I just smiled and waved. And I thought, "You're an asshole. You are at your core an asshole." And that comes up a lot. I remember one day I was doing some work for Spartan in Mexico, and I remember the checkout of the hotel. They were idiots at the checkout of the hotel, and my cab driver didn't seem to have his shit together. And then I got to the check-in at the airport, and everything was really slow. And I was so mad at everybody else. I thought, "Oh, there's one common denominator in all these scenarios, and it isn't any of those people. It's me." And so I think that, you know, as we progress and start doing things, we may get better at that thing, which is great, but we're still only comparing ourselves to ourselves. And the minute we start comparing ourselves to other people, we get into trouble, right? Mm-hmm. Because, and again, our society is set up that way. You know, every TV show is to make you want a crib like that, or want you to be like the Kardashians or whatever it is. You know, it's not enough to be happy with yourself. And, you know, Joe and I talk a lot about that, about the idea of complacency versus contentment, right? And complacency, sure, can be a trap where it's like, that's good enough. But I think no matter where you're at, it's also important to say, "I am where I'm at, and I'm happy with that. And I want to get better, and I'm happy with where I am now. And I don't need to judge up or down or be as good as that person or better than that person. It's just, you know, I'm happy, and I'm going to do the work to move forward."
I love that you get that kind of introspection only from those moments alone. And so we've talked about, you know, your philosophy on why we need to seek obstacles and some of the benefits of that through fitness. But I think that going back to the very core is, let's say someone listens to this, they're excited, they go for a walk tomorrow, and then maybe they're walking for a week, and then they wake up and they're just not feeling it. We've all felt that. What are some of your tips or habits to get yourself to go, especially when you don't want to? Because these listeners are never going to get to that end goal if they can't do it daily, you know?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that you really have to embrace the get-to attitude, not the have-to attitude. And to remember, why am I doing this? And, you know, whatever it is, if you lean into it at a high level, there's going to be a point at which it sucks, right? Like wrestling, it's not always fun. It's actually very, very rarely fun. This is the only fun part of wrestling.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody lifting your hand up. Every other part is hard. Now, when I say it's not fun, I enjoyed every minute of it. I really enjoyed doing it, but I had to enjoy the unenjoyable parts. And mm-hmm. So you got to look and say, why am I doing this? Now, with running, if you're doing it to lose weight, you're probably not going to want to do it on the days that you're not feeling it. If you're doing it to go faster, you're probably not going to. If you're doing it because, hey, I have this body that allows me to run, allows me to do these amazing things, that allows me to get my breathing tuned in and my mind tuned in while I'm out there doing this. Oh, and I'm probably going to lose weight and get faster along the way. And I get to do it. Yeah. That's pretty awesome. And then on the days you don't feel like doing it, you just need to remember why you're doing it. What's the motivation? Well, the motivation is it's going to make me healthier, happier, stronger, better. Cool. I'm going to do it. And then the other thing is, if there's a day that you really can't get yourself to do it, say, okay, well, what am I going to do instead? Like, what am I replacing this with? And, you know, like for me, for example, I've got a really jacked up hip. And so going out and running the kind of distance I like to run isn't really the option it usually is. So, okay, I guess I'll just sit on the couch and watch Netflix. Is that a suitable substitute? No, God, no, it's not. No. Get on my bike instead is a suitable substitute. So when somebody says, I don't feel like doing anything, I'd say, awesome. Then truly don't do anything. Then truly sit and meditate for the next hour instead. Mm. That's going to serve you well. And you're probably going to find 5 minutes in it, you go, fuck, I'd rather run.
Yeah.
then go run.
Absolutely.
But if it's, I'm just going to hand my destiny over to the television, that doesn't cut it. And if that's what you find yourself doing, then you really have to look at, are you even remotely committed to what you said you're committed to? Because clearly you're not. And then, okay, maybe you need to revisit it. If you hate running that much, then maybe you should be biking or swimming or whatever. And this sounds crazy to say this, but, or the other alternative is to say, I just accept that I'm not going to do any of those things. But you have to consciously do that. And most people won't. They'll keep tricking themselves. I'm going to do this. Well, I didn't do that, so I'm going to do this. I didn't do that, so I'm going to do this. And it's not until they finally say, I guess I just need to embrace the fact that I am an inactive, lazy, unhappy person, and that's who I choose to be. At that point, you may find that your motivation returns, because that's not a great choice. And yet, a lot of people by default are making that choice, right? So you just, I think you have to face where you're actually at, because if it's not where you want to be, there is a way to get there. Like there's always a way to get from where you are to where you want to be. It usually involves something that you think you have to do, and that's not the case at all. It involves something you get to do. And if you look at everything as a get to, I hate when people say, oh, I have to go to my kid's parent-teacher interview tonight. Oh, you have to, do you? No, yeah. You get to go and participate in your child's education. Or I have to drive my my grandmother to her hospital appointment. Have to, you get to, no matter what it is, right? And it's funny, when you were talking about embracing the mundane, that's something I've only really recently got, because I'm pretty addicted to adrenaline and stimulation and go, go, go. And I realized that my unwillingness to sit down and do the very boring accounting or the very boring reporting or the very boring whatever was really holding me back, because it limited my ability to lean into the next adventure, because I wasn't ready for it, because I still had to close the loop on that other stuff. And so then it's always hanging over you. It's weighting you down. And so once you realize that, yeah, putting in that behind the scenes, mundane stuff, it opens up so much opportunity for all the other good stuff. So that's one that it's still not hard to not see it as a have to. I have to do this report. But no, the truth is, I get to do this report, because when this report is done, I've done my job and I'm now available for the next thing. So, I mean, it's got to get done. So I get to do it now. And if I do it now, then man, oh man, I'm free to do whatever else. So yeah, no matter what it is. And, you know, John Smith had one move, a single leg, and he drilled it so many times that no one could defend it, right? Yeah. And so he didn't have to do that. He got to do that. He did it to the point where it was indefensible.
And that's the mundane too. I mean, at a certain point when he had discovered it, and then, you know, we're going off topic, but that's okay.
Sure, yeah.
You know, he, like, you know, after you win a couple world titles, you just want to get to the world championships. You don't want to go through 10 months of training. That's the mundane that you have to embrace. And obviously it does, you know, the more disciplined you are, the more freedom you have, because once that's mundane's in the book, then you can really explore and get creative.
Yeah, absolutely.
The one thing you just, by answering that question, you inadvertently talked about your notion of reframing, have to versus get to is one of the most common. How does that tie into your work with hypnosis? And I am genuinely curious about this.
Sure. So in my coaching, I, for a while, I had a dedicated hypnosis practice where people would come to me to be hypnotized to change their perspectives on smoking or sleeping or stress or whatever it was that they want to change about their lives. And the reason I changed to a broader coaching practice with hypnosis as one tool is it was almost like you hung out a great big sign that said, lazy people come to me, right? Because it'd be like, I want to lose 60 pounds, but I'm not going to change my diet. I'm not going to exercise. So would you hypnotize me instead? And at the end of the day, really all hypnosis is causing you to focus on something and then see it differently. I mean, that's what hypnosis is. It's allowing you to get rid of all distractions, focus on this one thing, and then shift how you see this one thing. And so it would help people make that change. And whatever it was, it would be, for example, someone would smoke because they associated that with stress relief. They had to, because they had to relieve their stress. And so the idea was, okay, there are other ways you can relieve your stress. You know, literally, I would hypnotize people to carry a straw cut in half. So it was about the length of a cigarette. And when they'd go for the cigarette break, they'd take their straw out and they just breathe through the straw. Because really, I mean, there's huge benefit to smoking. There is tremendous benefit to being a smoker. And that benefit is you're going to go outside and you're going to spend for 5 to 10 minutes and do nothing but... Now, unfortunately, you're breathing in shitty chemicals and you smell terrible and your fingers are gross and yellow and your hair and your skin get bad. but you're breathing, which is something we should all do. So maybe get the only benefit of smoking without any of the negatives and go out and actually breathe very deliberately through a straw and realize that, man, that's the part that I enjoy. I don't need the nicotine and the tar and the crap. So what are you actually trying to achieve, right? And then a huge, huge one. I dealt with a lot of people with grief when I was doing my hypnosis.
Really?
I don't know why. For some reason, that became something that started to flow in. A woman who had lost two very close family members who'd never been able to process that, and it completely blocked her in her ability to do her job because she could only focus on this. Another woman who'd been a hospice care provider who had seen so many people, very young people, had passed and had realized that she'd been the last person they saw and really felt a huge weight from that. And we're just able to reframe both of those where it was, you know, we can't change what happened, but we can absolutely change how you've processed it. And then in terms of trauma, when people go back in their life to trauma, a big part of hypnosis is you go back to the point where that bad thing happened and you made a decision about it. So somebody did something terrible to you and you decided that you're worthless, or somebody did something terrible to you and you decided that you can't trust anyone, or you did something really bad and made the decision that I'm not a good person or I'm not smart. So you just go back to that moment and you re-experience that moment and you freeze it and stop it and say, okay, here's the decision that you made. What are other decisions you could have made? You know, you could have realized somebody did something to me and I survived and I'm amazing and I'm all powerful,
mm-hmm.
right? The fact that that didn't kill me, I could really take away from that, oh my God, I'm incredible. And so you go back and you just replay it in their mind where they're actually experiencing it in a very heightened state. And you attach that new meaning to it. And so you can do that with anything.
Yeah. You can do it. And obviously the theme of this episode is obstacles. And obviously that's one of the probably the most common ways to do it is, you know, athletic obstacles. I mean,
yep.
That's like we have a little lab and we're creating a lab, but we're going to set ourselves to run 5 times this weekend. And every time we don't want to. And so we're going to reframe how we think about it. And hopefully that gets us ready for life when there are real obstacles where we truly have no control. I love this talk track. We could talk all day about it. Johnny, we're going to come back. And I want to talk about your thoughts on parenting and distilling this to children, because that's something I'm also super curious in.
For sure. Awesome, brother. Thanks so much.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Endurance Series on Spartan Up Podcast. Spartan Up is your partner in resilience for mind, body, and spirit. We're here 3 days every week. Tuesdays, you can find Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan, interviewing biohackers, business leaders, authors, and athletes. Thursdays and Saturdays, catch episodes from our DECA, Endurance, Trail, Combat, and La Ruta series. Do you know someone who needs a little nudge? Maybe they could use some motivation, tactics, to be stronger, healthier, happier, more successful. Tell them about our show. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment. We want to know who's watching and who's listening. Thanks. See you next time.